Welcome to New Legacy Radio with Christine Erickson. Are you someone who doesn't have children by circumstance, choice, or chance? This show is for our collective community. Are you someone who influences policy, DEI initiatives, or media narratives? Learn how you can co-create inclusive, equitable policies and environments for people without children. Now, here is your host, Christine Erickson.
Welcome, everyone, to the premiere episode of New Legacy Radio. Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Christine Erickson. I'm the founder of New Legacy Institute, which was created to address the issues that we share in common as diverse communities within the collective community of people without children. Due to the unconscious biases and pronatalist culture and policies, our community remains largely unacknowledged in media, policy, and education narratives, as well as DEI initiatives. New Legacy Radio is an opportunity for us to more visibly share our experiences and perspectives to incite meaningful change for our community. We look forward to taking this journey with you. Today, we have an incredible guest with us, Hillary Fennell. She is an award-winning program maker and journalist with extensive experience working in television and radio as a series producer and director. Her work runs the gamut from current affairs to arts and human interest. She most recently released her groundbreaking radio documentary, Childless. Childless is a beautiful and engaging documentary, which shares the stories of six women who are involuntarily childless. Hillary's own voice and experiences are also woven throughout. Now, I'd like to share with you a brief introductory clip of Childless, followed by an engaging conversation with its creator, Hillary Fennell.
I don't talk about this. I don't talk about not having children.
So many tiny, tiny things that you will never have, like school plays or sticky hugs or grown-up kids coming home from university with girlfriends and all the continuity in life that that gives you.
In some ways, the choice just kind of disappeared.
That's the experience that I have had as a childless person. I have had this, we'll just go sort it.
The number of women who are childless, but not by choice, is on the increase.
I saw shamans who broke eggs into glasses of water and hovered them over me.
All these things like, oh, you'll never know love until you're a mother. Well, that's like, surely I do know love.
I'm taking you to meet six of these women, seven including myself, at different stages in our stories, and to discover how it is possible to create a life of meaning being childless in a child-centered society.
Well, Hillary, thank you so much for being here with us today. And I have to say, this is such a moving documentary. I just have so much gratitude for you making this for our community and to share with others.
Well, thank you very much for that praise and also for inviting me on. So it's so lovely to be your first guest. I'm very honored. So thank you. And such lovely words. And I'm so glad that you appreciated the documentary because I kind of put my heart and soul into this one.
Yes. Yes, and it feels that all the way through. Can you share a little bit with us about why you made this documentary?
Oh, gosh, that's a long story. I mean, it's something I've been thinking about for a while, as in, I don't have children. And whenever I'd bring it up, you know, the usual thing, it seemed to be quite difficult to discuss it. And this went on for a number of years, but I wasn't quite sure that it was a thing. You know, I thought it was just maybe in my head and I was being overly sensitive, et cetera, et cetera. But when I began to talk to more and more people about it, it became clear that this was actually some kind of silent, just something that wasn't spoken about, that it was taboo. And then I had an opportunity to kind of take some time out. I was writing a book, actually, a novel. And you know the way sometimes in those kind of silent times, these things can come to you. So I was in an artist retreat with at a table with six women, and three of them were talking about their children, and then they were talking about their grandchildren, and then they took out the photos, which normally go around. Like, normally in these type of places, you talk about art and politics and so forth, but the other three of us, I noticed, went completely silent, and then it twigged. I said, oh, we don't have kids, but we were being really polite and saying, oh, thank you, show us the photos, and then I think one of us just spoke up and said, do you know that we don't have children? And I think the response was, yeah, lucky you, like, you know. And we said, no, actually, we might have liked to have children. And it kind of completely changed the conversation. And also for me, it just was a kind of a light bulb moment where I said, this isn't just me. This is an actual subject that does not get discussed and that merits discussion. And the other women who were not childless, they like me, they said, we never talk about this. So actually the beginning, that clip there, that woman who begins by saying, I don't talk about this, she's one of the women I actually met at that table. So then I was like, but hang on, this is crazy. It's not, why? Is it as if it's a criminal act or something, you're ashamed about it. So to answer you, that's where it came from. But it took, you know, it took a little while for me to kind of go there because, like, oh, I know if I do this, I'm going to have to look at my own pain more, et cetera, et cetera. So I kind of, it took me a little while to actually get it off the ground. But that's where the idea came from. It came from personal experience and actually being kind of disgusted that this was, in this day and age, that people don't feel comfortable to discuss this subject.
Yeah, it's those moments that kind of take your breath away because they're so unexpected. They happen and you step back and go, oh, this is what's happening.
And I think because I was in that kind of headspace where I was in a creative space anyway, that I didn't just brush it aside and say, oh, it's probably just me and the way I feel today, or it's, you know, I'm chop chop, I've got to go on to the next thing and the next thing. I actually sat with it and said, this isn't right. Like, this isn't right that we feel so, so just not, you know, it's self-policing, isn't it, really? But we just don't feel, I just felt people weren't comfortable talking about it. And I was really, and then, of course, I'm like a dog with a bone. Once I see there is something there, I'm like, okay, let's dig down into it and see. And so I was educating myself as I researched the documentary. Because, as I say, I came from a place where I would be, oh, just being very stoic about my position, I suppose, and thinking, you know, because I was getting responses, like, if I kind of tentatively said, I might have liked to have children, saying things like, well, if that's the worst things that happens to you in your life, what have you got to complain about? Which kind of tends to shut one up.
So yes,
it wasn't something that I had really allowed myself to really experience the pain of it, I suppose, because I was always minimizing it.
Sure.
So the documentary allowed me to really look at that and see why are the reasons behind that.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, there's so much to navigate. And when you're kind of in that protective space of how far do I go to this? And again, I just think it's like having your breath taken away. I already said that. But for me, it was too, those outside moments that you don't expect. And you're like, how do I mitigate this is where I always go. Like, how do I immediately mitigate this?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, beautiful.
For me, it was minimizing. So I would always, you know, kind of say, to myself, like, it's not that bad. It doesn't matter. It's okay. They're right. Like, it's, you know, compared to a lot of people, it's not. All of those things, which are true. But then we know what that does is it just pushes the kind of problem or the feeling. It just pushes it under the carpet and you don't actually deal with it. So I really wanted to delve into it. And I thought a radio documentary would be a really good place to start. It's less intrusive than coming along with cameras and filming for television or making a film. So I thought I'd begin with radio, which is a little bit softer and more accessible. It allows people who mightn't really want to be in it to feel, well, at least I won't be seen. You know, obviously they were happy to have their voices heard. But I also think it's a great medium for people for dealing with those type of very sensitive subjects.
Absolutely. Yeah, I felt so connected listening to it and also related to that feeling of, you know, how many of us don't want to necessarily be visible in this. You know, it's a different type of place to be in to express that experience fully amidst all of the things that are coming at us. And I just think it was a beautiful way to start to delve into this and to share these voices of these women, including your own. And while you were doing this, in the process of making this documentary, who were you thinking of making this for beyond these six stories and your own perspective at that table that day?
For everybody, really. I mean, to educate people, I suppose, who might know that which was really a response I got, that this is a thing, that there is such a thing as involuntary childlessness, but also, and for the people who are currently in my position, who might be over the age of, say, 45, which is where the statistics really begin, but also to really, in an altruistic way, to say to us, what kind of society do we want to live in? Because unless we address this now, so there's the cohort who mightn't have children now, and policy-wise, when they're aging, who's going to be there for them in the future? We have to be taken into account. Also, the fact that I think people who are childless would like some empathy if they like children. But then looking forward, I was thinking also about younger generations coming up so that we can fight for policy change, for better education around fertility and the fact that fertility treatments are have a very low efficacy rate, much lower than people think, maybe 30%.
Absolutely.
And also the need for free childcare, policies like that, so we can encourage people to have their children younger so that, it's easier. They don't need, I'm just making, generalizing greatly, but they might need support, et cetera. But then within their career, that they feel they can still sustain a career and have a career path rather than leaving having children till later after they've kind of established their career. So there'd be very serious reasons why I did this. But I think it's only 46 minutes long. I look at it as my first kind of salvo into this area, because I think there's a much bigger piece to be made, which would feature, be a much more in-depth. But for this piece, I just really wanted to put it to start the conversation. So it was made for everybody, but also to, I hope, give some support to people who might feel, gosh, this is my journey. This is speaking for me. So it might be a help. Mm-hmm. And it might also put people in touch with supports that they mightn't have known existed, such as one of the guests, Jodie Day, who I think who runs a group called Gateway Women, and a lot of women join that and find it very useful. So there was a myriad of reasons why I made it, but it's really, I see it as a documentary that would be of interest to everybody, really.
Yes, I agree. And I really, to have packed all of that into 46 minutes was so brilliant. I was amazed by it. It touched on all of those points. And people are often in so many different places in their journeys, whether they're just beginning to become into acceptance of not having children, or in acceptance, or going through the second stage of now people are not having children, they're having grandchildren, their peers. And listening to that from my perspective, where I'm in a space of acceptance, I was just still so moved to hear and feel and experience that empathy throughout, maybe from the spaces where that hadn't been acknowledged before in my own life. And so I really appreciate that. And then to have this as a venue for education and to share, I'm so excited to have you here today so that we can do that, so more people can hear this and have access to it. I just so appreciated all of it.
Thank you, because that's my aim, is to get it out to as many people as possible. Like, I'm based in Ireland. That's where the piece was made. It interviews Irish people, but I feel it's a global reach. So the great thing is with the internet, et cetera, and being on Instagram, and then we connected. I'm getting replies from people all around the world. So the fact that it is available, for anybody to listen to on my website or on the website, it just makes it, from the old days where if you didn't catch it on 9 o'clock on the radio, that was it.
Right,
so I feel that we have something here to really, it's very tangible, and it's very relatable. So I'd agree with you there. I think I was trying to pack a lot into the 46 minutes, but I didn't want to overwhelm people. Mm-hmm. So I did make a decision to concentrate quite a lot on the stories, because I think that's really what connects with people, is the stories.
Yes.
And as you say, to choose people at different stages in their journey.
Mm-hmm. And can you share more with us about what was your process of making this?
The process. Well, let's see. So it would have begun, I'd say, is it 2 years ago now? With COVID, it's so hard to keep track. But whenever I had that aha moment in the artist retreat, I would then start to research. I started to write a proposal. I then had to think, well, I think one of the first things I found was Jodie and Gateway Women, and a few academics like Christina Archetti, who'd written the piece about the representation of childless women in film.
Yes.
And a lovely guy called Robin Hadley, who does it as an academic in England and writes about childless, not by choice men. So I had quite a few people, and I was trying to see, initially I thought I'd do men, I'd do I'd do child-free as well, which, and I'd do it all in one life. And this is just insane. This is like taking, you know, the whole of, it's there's no need to do that. So I said, no, I'll wait. I'll just go with women. So my process is normally like that. It tends to go out before it goes in. Mm-hmm. So, and then I applied for funding, and there's a scheme in Ireland that it's public service broadcasting. So it's public money, but it's very competitive. So you have to first get a broadcaster who say, so the first hoop is to get a radio station to say they'll broadcast it. The second hoop is to apply for the funding. So I got News Talk said they would broadcast it, which is a national radio station. Then I wrote a proposal, got the funding from, it's called the BAI, the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland. And in order to get that funding, you have to have quite well thought out what's going to be in the programme. So at that stage, with no money, I began to research people, try to find people to take part, which I thought would be relatively difficult because I've made a lot of documentaries, but I had no idea, Christina. It was probably the hardest thing I've ever had to cast. Wow. Nobody wanted to do it. Like they'd say, because I began with my friendship circle or my people I knew, and then I'm like, my God, I know tons of childless people.
Yes. So,
but then I was going, are they childless? Are they child-free by choice or childless? Or are they, you know, I didn't even know whether they're child-free or so. And it's quite a tricky question. So
It is.
And then, and I'm quite, you know, I'm used to researching and producing. So I'm upfront and asked and found people who then were in the category, say, of being child, not by choice. But they said, I will do your, I'll talk to you for research purposes, but won't go on air. I can't. And I'm going, I can't because I don't want to be seen with the losers and I don't want people to feel sorry for me. And then a lot of people were quite ambivalent. They were like, oh, I'm not really valid because I didn't try 9 rounds of IVF. Like I only tried once. It was as if there's some kind of, you know, competition to be allowed to say that you wanted children. So it was really interesting, but also quite challenging to find the people. And then, so let's say I wanted different stages as well. Like I wanted a younger woman, maybe somebody who's been more in their 60s, maybe, you know, I wanted people at different stages. So in order to have those 6, I would have to probably interview at least 4 people in each category, if you know what I mean, to get that.
Yes.
So 24. But to get I probably had to interview 40 people. So it was a lot of people.
Wow.
And I'd say at that point, there would have been men involved as well. And then it just kind of coalesced, and sometimes it naturally happens that some people self-select to withdraw or whatever. So I was left with a good amount of people to choose from finally, but it took a lot. Long way of saying it was difficult to cast. It was difficult to cast. And then once I had those people, I said, well, can I put your names in this proposal? So if I get the funding, would you agree to do it? And they more or less said yes. So once I got the funding, I think maybe 1 or 2 people, maybe 2 of the original lineup pulled out, because I think it's one thing saying in theory that you'll do it. And then when somebody comes back and says, I have the funding and we're interviewing you next week kind of thing, or next month, I think a few people realize, oh gosh, this is actually maybe going to be quite, not just that they would be exposed to their family and friends, but also I think maybe they realized that it would be quite maybe triggering because like myself, you'd have to confront them, these feelings maybe all over again. Maybe there were feelings that they thought they had dealt with last year or the year before or whatever. So I would be very sensitive about how I hope, about how I treat my contributors. So I also didn't really want to interview somebody who was like in the depths of despair, because I felt that would be probably unethical as well. So I'm so delighted with the women who did it. They're just amazing.
Yes, incredible.
They're
like
the dream selection. They're funny, they're articulate, they're warm.
Yes.
the stories are all different, yet all the same. They're honest. They just were a joy to interview and a joy to work with. Yeah. And
beautiful.
I'm so thankful, because if it wasn't for them, there would be no program.
Yes, yes, yes. How their energies all work together made it so powerful, really. I wanted to go back to something you said quickly about, you know, I think childless by circumstance women, this comes up a lot. Just the underneath shame there can be in that comparative analysis or comparative pain, which you mentioned earlier, you know, well, it could be worse. You don't have children. So you could have a worse situation. And that has come up in so many conversations I've had, particularly about like how hard did you try? It's not always spoken, but if you haven't tried to have a child, you know, in all the ways possible, even if you have access to that or you're ambivalent, there's an assumption that, you know, you wanted this less, or if you really wanted it. And those kind of stories or those kind of responses from people really stay with us in a really heartfelt way that I think does block a lot of us from sharing our stories more openly.
Yes. And the way I came to understand it was when I heard about disenfranchised grief, which is what the psychotherapy community call it, which is a grief that you really are not allowed to, society doesn't allow us to experience, such as childlessness, such as the death of, an ex-spouse or an ex-partner, which happened to me. People go, why are you upset? You split up 10 years ago. Death of a pet, those type of things, which are just like, sure, that's not really important. And when I realized that, the grief around childlessness is seriously disenfranchised grief, then it made sense for me, because that's why I would just internalize it and say, because I was thinking, what's wrong with me? Like, why, when I try to bring this up, does nobody want to talk about it? Like, I thought and you know, it'd be quite tentative as well. You know, you kind of waiting for that point in the conversation. It's one of those things to bring it up, and you're brave enough and you bring it up, and your friend kind of says, sure, why, if you wanted kids, you would have had them in your 20s. And you go, okay. And you kind of go on, leave that. That didn't go so well. And I did a few of those, which really at the time, I didn't allow myself to even be upset by those comments. I thought, I kind of thought, oh, they're right. It's a bit like, because you're in such a minority that you also feel, oh gosh, I'm being terribly self-indulgent here, aren't I? And it's really only when I talked to Jody, and she she was saying, you are not alone. She said, all of my friends. I was like, really? I thought it was just me. And when I realized that, that made sense to me. Because if it was my experience, surely it's other people's experience. Because, you know, I'd be normally a very private person as well. So this is not something I would be talking about. Normally anybody knows, would be shocked I'm doing this. But it's like, I probably allowed people to think I was child-free. Because it was just less painful. And it also, the last thing I wanted was any kind of pity. So... But then I was going, hang on, that's not really fair. It's also not really true. And it's also like, how dare they? And who is they? I mean, I'd internalize it. But as if, you know, as if it was my fault that I was childless. That's how I felt. That I hadn't maybe tried hard enough. In my case, it was just purely bad timing, because I did not really want a child on my own. Like, I wanted a family unit, which I thought I was going to have with my husband or a partner. Children. So when that didn't happen, I just now realize that not only are you grieving the breakdown of the relationship, which is bad enough.
Yes.
That's why I thought I was so upset, but I was actually also grieving this other, don't even talk about it. Not even, I didn't even know there was a word for that grief, because I didn't know why I was so upset. And now I can see that's why. So if I can do anything, you know, when they say take your pain and make art out of it, I hope I'm going to do it.
Yes.
They take art and make pain. That would be terrible. But,
don't do that.
It's my journey. And I'm hoping, like, if it helps anybody to actually, I suppose, say own the pain and say, actually, this is, I am allowed to feel really upset about this because it's something I wanted. And I just think we have to break that thing that we have to prove how many rounds of IVF we had or how many, you know, it's not fair. I mean, surely I should be allowed to articulate this was something that I thought was going to happen and it didn't. And it really upset me. And it's awful when you feel judged as being, oh, she's probably so into her career, or maybe she's so selfish. Or maybe,
yes.
I mean, why did I ever give off? When did I ever give off that vibe? Like, I mean, if you looked at how I live, I mean, I think I'd be a brilliant parent. So that you've also got, and then you go, oh, maybe I wouldn't. Maybe that's what, so.
Yes.
And I think that's because I had nobody to talk to about it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then the comparative analysis or the projected assumptions, it's like this process. There are all these layers where the shutdown can happen, even somatically, you know, depending on someone's experience, how you're responding to what somebody comes back to you with. It can be quite jarring, even when you're comfortable with your story.
Like what? Like the bingo things, is it?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
You would have done it in your 20s or you.
Yes, or have you thought about adoption? All of the things that you've combed through and thought about, or that you know aren't options for you or weren't options at the time, the timing. Yes. So we're going
to. Yeah, and I think that needs to be unpacked really more, definitely.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. So we're going to be taking a short break here soon. And when we come back, we will continue with Hillary and learn more about your process and what it was like to put yourself in your own work, what that was like, having your own voice there and having such a brilliant piece that was also a departure from your other work.
Absolutely. I mean, that was definitely difficult. It wasn't something I'd normally do. So I had to think long and hard about it. But I mean, there are ways of, you know, at the end of the day, I'd say I couldn't interview people in that position and not kind of join them. I think that would have been very churlish. So, and also I think it was very good for me to see why I felt so uncomfortable about it. And I suppose the main reason is just a logistical one, which is that I am a program maker.
Yes.
So I do not want to get identified with one subject. I'm normally the one doing the interviewing and drawing stories out, and I'm not normally in the, but it's just a different style of making. It's just a different style of program making. And it's still, the program is still very much similar to the type of program I would normally make, style-wise. It's just that some of my story is in it more. But it was, I mean, that was tricky enough to do that. It was a hard line to navigate. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Hillary. We'll be back with more after this short break. Thank you so much.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
New Legacy Institute is committed to equitable and inclusive change for people without children. We invite you to become a member of New Legacy Institute and to share what matters most to you. Participate in our research surveys, upcoming webinars, and efforts to influence policy, media narratives, and DEI initiatives that fully recognize our community. Check us out online at newlegacyinstitute.com. Join us today.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to New Legacy Radio with Christine Erickson. Now back to the show. Here is Christine Erickson.
Thank you. We are back with Hillary Fennell, the creator of Childless, a radio documentary featuring involuntarily childless women and their stories. Hillary, before the break, we started talking about what it was like to put yourself in your own work. Can you share a little bit more about that with us?
Yes, I found it a challenge, to be perfectly honest, because normally I would make programs about other people, and that's one of my skills, I suppose, is that I have been an interviewer for years and I draw people out and I love that. Mm-hmm. And it was a real case of poacher turned gamekeeper. way around, where I felt then I had to be, I felt I couldn't ask women in this situation when I am childless myself to talk about it without revealing that I am. But then that made me wonder, well, why am I so uncomfortable about it? And A, it made me feel very vulnerable because a lot of people I know in my life don't even know this is an issue for me or never knew for me. And I didn't want to be judged. I didn't want anybody's pity because I would be somebody who I hope people think is very cool and together and all the rest. So,
but then I
thought, well, isn't that the whole point? And also, I suppose more from the main reason was more from a business sense. I do not want to be identified with this because I'm going to make programs about lots and lots of different subjects. But then I thought, well, that's just really an excuse. You know, there's no reason why I can't do this and others. So, but the main thing I found was my resistance was kind of, shyness is the wrong word because I have been a television presenter and reporter in the past, so I've been on camera before. So it's not that. It was more vulnerability about people judging me, I suppose, to be perfect. And then I'm going, well, what did I do wrong? Like, I'm not like, I just want. And so the more I, you know, it's like a circular. I'm sorry you've had this. You're going, and I'm going, what is? And then I, then a part of me said, oh, for God's sake, like, if I can do something good in this world with this, why not bloody do it?
Why not?
So that was really the energy behind it. But it was challenging for those reasons. But I'm very glad I did it.
Yes.
It took a lot. It was a tricky one to make because it kind of triggered my own sadness around this, which when you don't need to look at it, you can kind of be busy and get away and, you know, get away from it. But I really had to look at it again. And also talking to the wonderful women who I spoke to, who were still in huge grief around this, it really made me very proud and very honored that I was bringing their stories. But I also realized I had a huge responsibility to speak up myself and to speak my own truth as well. So,
yeah, even when I listened to the documentary the first time, it really moved me. It, you know, I cried and I felt, I mean, the identification with it and being seen, but also just the clarity of it and the beautiful way that everything was interwoven. It moved me in so many ways. It made me so proud to be connected in that way to these women, to you. And I just, I felt seen. I felt acknowledged. I felt something that I hadn't experienced before via another medium, you know, the way that you did it. And I just kept being moved. And when I spoke to people briefly about it in between, I kept getting choked up and I thought, what is this? It's not a new grief. It's a familiarity. It was a resonance with the familiarity of it. And it felt so wonderful.
I'm so glad, because if I could have said what reaction did I want to get my ID listener, that's exactly what I wanted. Because as I say, for me as well, I just felt so close to these people. I identify so much with their stories. They're not all this, obviously we've all got different stories, but that feeling, that feeling of loss. And because there's nothing, you can't prove it's a loss. It's like, it's not really a loss. It's a disenfranchised grief and you can't prove the loss. Like, it's not like a miscarriage. It's not like your child died, but it's tangible and it's real. And that's what's so frustrating is you're going, why am I crying? Why am I upset? Like, I didn't lose anything. But you did lose something.
Yes.
You did something. And I think Amanda puts that so beautifully at the start, which really resonated with me when she said, we're losing that continuity of life.
Yes.
So now, okay, I mightn't want a screaming baby right now, but I'd like a little 10-year-old or, you know, then they'd be a 20-year-old. You know, I'm extremely close to my own mother. Sadly, my father passed away, but I likewise was so close to them. So I kind of find it cruel that I won't have Hillary. Do you know what I mean? And of course, what will happen, and they could leave you and go live in Australia. But I'm saying the way our family is, like, we're quite close. So it just seems cruel. And it's that continuity of life that it's so I think I wanted to make it clear. And maybe this is something I'll have to do in another documentary. You're losing that continuity. Like, it's not just the baby phase.
Yes.
That would be nuts that women of every age want a baby. It's the child, and then it's the teenager, and then it's the young adult. And it's all those myriad of things that a family life entails. So and not to be Pollyanna-ish about it, of course. It's extremely challenging. Like, I have four nephews, my brother and sister both have kids, but and I have tons of friends with kids, and I know how challenging it is. But it's that loss. Once Amanda said that, something clicked for me as well. I said, it actually is a loss then. Because normally I think, isn't it very, don't you find that it's very intangible?
Yes.
Absolutely.
And I loved that quote too, when she said that, the continuity, because I think there's this spectrum of when something is physical, the loss of a child, the loss of a baby, or a miscarriage, there's this whole spectrum of what is visible and what is not visible. And the less visible something is, the less relatable or believable it becomes in so many cultures. And so that piece of not having physically had something and lost, that conversation gets very lost and separated in a very different way. And I think that's where a lot of the pain comes into. I mean, we talked about disenfranchised grief, but even in expressing that story, however, the continuity of life, we have all lived that in different ways. We have lived those relationships and who we are to other people. So we do know it. We do know it.
Yes. And I think you've put it very well there. I also wanted to, so let's take that as a given and accept that's the truth. But I also not want to end on, I want to end on a high note, you know, because I wanted to also really dig down into it, which again, I can only touch on it in such a short program, but say, why are we convinced? You know, when you say to somebody, like I would interview, I used to do a column in a newspaper for years, you know, what's your favorite achievement? All these things, those type of questions. A famous celebrity every week. And I'd say 90% of them had kids and 90% answer the question, what's your biggest, what are you most proud of? My kids.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Like, oh my God. Like every week I was going, here we go. So, I was going to say, I'll never be happy. Like, I'll never have kids. Like, I'll never, in some way, think, oh, I don't have kids. I can't be, I'd be 100. And in some way, I thought I'd be 100% happier if I had a child. And then I had to really dig down into that and say, but hang on, then I'm sentencing myself to an unhappy life in this lifetime. Who knows when we come back again? And I just could not accept that. So I wanted to actually challenge that and go, that is just pronatalism telling us that. That is not true. Those people are lying. A lot of them probably hate their kids. Probably don't get on with the kids, but it's the done thing, isn't it, in society? It's the it's what we say if we have kids. Oh, I love them. They're brilliant.
That's awesome.
So, but it kind of leaves us with like, well, what the hell do I say is my best thing I've ever done?
Right.
So I really wanted to look at that and say, you know what, that is absolute lie. And to really dig into it. And I do think the people I know who don't have children, because we've had to really dig down into what is the meaning of our lives, what do we stand for? What kind of morals do we have? What kind of people do I want to work with? What kind of work do I want to do? Like, I've been through so many, you know, really rigorous changes in that. And I hope I have high standards, because I'm just going, I don't want to. Like, it makes you really look at things that maybe if I had children, I'd just be so busy, I wouldn't even have had time or the need to look at. But when you don't have children, I think it is a kind of an existential crisis, in a sense, is that you have to look at these things in a way that I don't think people with children do until their children grow up and they leave home and then they're empty nesters. So I think it makes us actually it's actually in a funny way, it's the positive that we have to find meaning in other ways, and we have to be honest about life and say it's a cop-out to say, oh, children are the best thing I ever did. The meaning of my life is having children, because that's just, it's A, it's not true, and B, then that's not fair for the growing number. And might I stress, one of the reasons for doing this is because the number of childless people is increasing hugely, and it's going to affect our demographics and how we, it's just something that isn't spoken about that needs to be from a practical level, financial, global level. But I just thought that is not fair, like to say that a quarter of the population aren't as good as the three quarters with the children. It's just not fair. So I found that part, when I feel really down about it, that's what I think about and go, you were told a lie to begin with. So don't go, you can be as happy as as you could have been without children. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you're called to show up to your life because there isn't that other space or someone in front of it. It's actually, you know, the play on the word legacy. It, long before I knew I wouldn't have children, I just always thought, why do people call other people their legacy? You know, so it was kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing, I thought, but we're each living our own lives. And so legacy is very fluid in the way that I use it and why I call this new legacy. It's not that we're replacing not having a child with something else and some big life, as you address in your work, or having to do that. It's about who are we becoming and who are we being every day with ourselves with this and to others. You know, what does that look like? And how can we be well in that? Not having to replace that big identity that is assumed in pronatalist societies or people with children. But how do we really let go almost of that idea, even though I'm using that word? Yeah. And new legacy is, how are we all treating each other? Our group, childless people, child-free people, how are we included and not? To me, that's new legacy. What our inclusion is of all people and all of the things that we speak about in that, but we're not yet seen as a part of that.
That really, because I was going to ask you about that. Thank you about the title, about which is so clever. I totally agree. But it's like, because we're silent, people don't even know we exist. Yes. So until policymakers really know that we exist, they're not going to take us on board. They're not going to take the quarter of people without children on board who are aging without children and are going to have to pay for every single thing after tax.
Yes.
Like somebody to come and fix the TV, somebody to come, you know, if you don't have a kid, to come show you how to use the new internet when we're like, whatever will be available when we're like in our 80s. You know what I mean?
Think
through. Mm-hmm. And also the fact, to be very blunt, that we already contribute our taxes to people's, the education and the child care and the now the free medical care in Ireland for people's children, whereas that's of no benefit to me. I don't get anything back for, you know, I'm self-employed. I have to earn everything, then pay tax, then pay privately for every bit of medical care, etc. So, and that's just me. I mean, I'm not, I mean, there's a quarter of women in Ireland, and men, I'd say, but the statistics, from our new census is out this year, a quarter of women and men probably over the age of 45 are in that cohort. And yet they are completely ignored in all the advertising, all the media. It's still all happy families with the mortgages and the banks and supermarkets. And I'm just going like, you know, when you see something, that phrase, when you see something and you can't unsee.
Yes, so absolutely.
I had that moment maybe two years ago and it just drives me mad now.
Yes.
So I would say where I would have done a lot of work with the LGBT community years about when it wasn't legal and cool in Ireland to show. It's actually a documentary about the Irish Lesbian and Gay Organization trying to march in the St. Patrick's Day parade. Can you imagine that wasn't allowed 20 years
ago? Oh, my goodness.
So I think we are, without making too much of a song and dance about it, we are kind of a hidden group that because of our own, not that it's illegal or anything, or that it's socially, we've just silenced ourselves. And until we're band together and support each other, we won't get the recognition that we deserve. So, I mean, I'm so thankful that you're doing what you're doing, that we've hooked up, and it needs more people to just, to be really, have their eyes open. Because I thought, oh, it's just my personal sadness about not having, marriage broke up, didn't have kids. And then you're going, it's much more than that. And you dig down into it and you see these societal, systemic, you know, I'm really much more interested in all that now. I mean, and I say, once you see it, you cannot unsee it. And you're going, this is just unfair.
And even just base concepts of calling family policy, but meaning families with children or families that are, you know, people that are married to people that are married with children. I mean, we need to start there. You know, what is family? People who are single pay all those bills on their own. You know, I mean, we can go on and on. But I think once you start unraveling that, you see all of the systemic layers and really the web of what those economics have been for so long.
It probably suits them that we shut up. And that we don't, you know,
it suits
people who are controlling those systems because the status quo can continue. But I just actually, looking at the statistics now, if you say it's probably closer to 1 in 4 in Ireland and the UK, that's I mean, how can we, it's growing. And unless we inform younger people about, you know, that fertility treatments don't always work, all the things we said at the beginning, you know, there is a need for free childcare so that they can have maybe children younger, etc. Unless we start to actually really get that in place, I'd be worried about what's going to happen, because it's just, it's not going the other way. Like, it's increasing the childless. I read a piece of the FT yesterday in the Financial Times, like around Naomi Campbell having a baby at 51, around this very issue. So everywhere I look, it's like, okay, I'm really with the zeitgeist, and so are you. As in, this is, it's, as I say, when you've seen it, you can't unsee it, and you just have to try and do something about it. So making the documentary was almost like a first step. I don't see it as the final step.
Right. And I do, but I do love it and appreciate it so much for our work as well, because integrating, you know, looking at our, as I said in the beginning, our diverse communities within this community, childless, child-free, non-parents, people who don't have children yet, people who don't have children because they've lost children. I mean, it impacts all of us in certain ways similarly. And I think until we come together for that kind of collective conversation and action, if we keep staying in our corner, so to speak, then that change isn't going to happen. And that's what I hope to see. And it does need to be well represented. You know, the voice that you bring through this radio documentary, and I know you're going to do so many things going forward, other films that are about child-free, if we can bring that together and look at, you know, what is this common ground? Where are we being impacted? That's, I think, where we need to begin.
I think, as you say, it's not like trying to be divisive and say there's child-free people, childless people.
Yes.
Haven't had their kids yet, people whose kids have died. It's really not, I can tell that's not where you're coming from either. We're saying, we can work together.
Aging without children. And so I do think, you know, those identities and how we come to our story and sharing those narratives is really important. You know, our stories are different. It's a completely diverse community. You're talking about a quarter or more of any population, really. So of course we're diverse and we have all those intersections. So where are our crossroads? And I think listening to these things, helping us understand each other, coming from those different spaces, is so powerful as well with your documentary. So I'm curious, what has been the response to your documentary?
Incredible. Like, I mean, I am really overwhelmed. So I've made a lot of things over the years, and I can honestly say I've never had such a response. So I know it, you know, people say, I made a groundbreaking thing, and I go, not really. I think this is really a groundbreaking thing. No, it really is. Because now, and there's, and it's been challenging because I got an awful, you know, because I'm visible on, I'm on Instagram, people can contact me. So I was getting literally emails, direct messages, private messages from complete strangers all over the world, not just Ireland, but it was like a tsunami of grief as well. But luckily I was able to point people towards Gateway Women, which is something, you know, because I'm going, I'm not a trained psychotherapist. You know, all I can do is type back something nice, but I couldn't believe it. Like, it was quite upsetting. At the beginning, I was like, it's a month ago since it came out, so I was quite overwhelmed at the beginning because I felt, oh my God, this is such a responsibility. What am I going to do? I have to reply to all these people. But then I was kind of thrilled because I said, isn't this the idea? And then a lot of them were saying, oh, we heard that you might be wanting to do a TV series or something. If you do, this is my story. So I have a whole list of people now for that.
Excellent.
But then, so the response was it's been unreal, as in people saying, I can't believe you're saying all the things I thought. I didn't know. I thought it was just me. I've never spoken about this. You have really... And then another group of people saying, thank you for educating me. So I had a certain amount of, really more men than women who maybe went to university with me or know me, you know, and they'd still know me, but they don't know me very well. And they were just like, oh my God, we had no idea. We're so sorry. Like, we just thought you were delighted and child-free. And so I got, isn't that interesting?
That's interesting.
And someone saying, we didn't even know this was a thing. Like, we thought, women either had kids or they didn't. Like, we didn't want kids. So that, to me, was really interesting. Mm-hmm. Also, just what was really nice was some people who knew me on a personal level would have said, almost sorry, like, we didn't know we were in mm-hmm. South. Jamie, if you've kind of been the case.
But yes, just that the acknowledgement. I always say the acknowledgement is so, so important, because it's just so missing. It's so skirted around in conversations within families, within friends networks. I can remember sitting in a circle of all women at a professional event we were going to facilitate, and it just mentally calculated, oh, none of us have children, but none of us have ever spoken about this to each other.
But that's exactly where this came from. That's exactly the same experience. So, so the response was really, when I say overwhelming, that sounds kind of negative, but in the beginning, as I say, I was just so taken by surprise, because I've done quite a lot of press around this as well. I've been in the newspapers, I've been on national television and national radio. So again, you're kind of going, oh my God, why did I do this? But then the response was it's so positive, it's so encouraging, because people were, and the thing I feared, which is people feeling sorry for you and all the rest, I mean, that's not really the case.
So,
incredible response. But also I felt, gosh, this is a responsibility now I have to, and I was delighted, so therefore, to have something like Gateway Women to say, look, if you want to join that, that's a group of people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I refer people all the time too. It's a wonderful resource. So what is next for you? Just quickly, we're coming to the end here, but you mentioned TV, so...
In terms of this space, I would love to do a television documentary. If anybody wants to get in touch with me, my website is hillary@hillaryfennell.com, and all my contacts are there. I would like to do that. I would like to do a television series, and not necessarily just, I'd like it to be global. So I don't know what shape that will take yet, but it certainly would be wider. It would take all facets of this and really look at the demographics and talk to experts. Experts, demographers, sociologists, to see the impact of this. So we'll be also putting it in context historically. So yes, there'll be personal stories, but it will be much wider than the
piece. It is so needed. Yes.
So that, I'd love to do that. Then in terms of other work, I've just got a commission to make an arts documentary here for BBC, which is fantastic.
Lovely.
I do a lot of work with artists. It's about artists trying to get their work into a show in Belfast called the RUA, the Royal Ulster Academy, and lots of other productions, which, as you know yourself, it's called Development Hell, which are in the
yes, things are happening.
But now that COVID's lifting, it looks like we can shoot again. So that's why we're
so yes,
and lots of other. I lecture. I love that. I teach in an MA program. So lots of things like that. But in terms of the childless space, I would love, if people want to get in touch. I think this has to just be the beginning. I hope.
Absolutely. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Hillary, for being here today and for sharing your documentary. And you can listen to the documentary on Hillary's website, hillary@hillaryfennell.com. We look forward to continuing this conversation on Twitter, the mediums that we are both on. Please email us at radio@newlegacyinstitute.com. And we look forward to your feedback and questions and our continued learning and sharing. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to New Legacy Radio. We hope Christine and her guests have given you the context and insight to connect with our community in new ways. What personal or professional change might you consider to acknowledge and include in our diverse community of people without children? Until we speak again, we invite you to engage with us on any of our platforms.